all investors are vulnerable to financial fraud or abuse, but this is especially true for seniors. Sometimes the very basic steps that can act as a circuit breaker or protection get missed. For example, there is something called the trusted contact person, and that's information that can be really important to protect older investors, but it is a step that can get missed on financial forms. BE Works, in collaboration with the Ontario Securities Commission, has released some new research that identifies how the industry can use behavioral insights to protect older Canadians. Joining me now is Tyler Fleming, Director of the Investor Office at the OSC. Hello, Tyler.
Hi, Bruce.
What are some examples of financial fraud that is more often focused on Canadians 65 years and older?
You know what? There's all sorts of different frauds. I wouldn't actually want to name just one. The reality is that people can be taken advantage of by family, by friends, by any number of people, and in many different ways. But I think the important thing to remember is that it can happen to anybody. Anyone can become a victim of fraud or financial exploitation. The fraudsters are very good at manipulating and getting at people and their money. And so it can happen to everyone. And so one of the ways that we are trying to help protect people, not just from financial exploitation, but also in cases where, you know, getting older, many people over time might have experienced changes in their brains, and that is a normal process of human aging. But sometimes that can affect our decision making. So as you mentioned, we have been working with our colleagues across Canada on a policy project, which, among other things, seeks to establish a requirement that the industry, that advisors, make reasonable efforts to obtain what's called a trusted contact person. A trusted contact person, you know, it's someone that your advisor could call if they suspect that you're maybe being financially abused or there's other warning signs there. It's kind of like if you think of an emergency contact you give your kid's school, it's someone that can be contacted, just say, hey, you know, what's up with Bruce? I just know he's a little off today.
No, people think of that of me all the time. He's a little off today. And we don't have enough people listed to possibly hem in my behavior. I want to ask how that process goes. How does one set up a trusted contact person? And is it on everyone's account, or is it really something that's focused on people who are at the older end of the age spectrum?
Yeah, so it's a pretty new concept. So there's different ways of collecting it. In the US, they've been doing this a little bit longer than we will have. And what we know is that the majority of ways that this information is collected is through a form. You know, advisors will be talking to their clients as well, having these conversations. But generally, there'll be some standard form that a firm will provide that can be used in these conversations. But, you know, design of forms, that gets the heart of this study, because we know that small changes to forms can actually nudge people to make better or different decisions. And there's a lot of defaults and assumptions built into the way forms are designed that might seem neutral to people who don't put a ton of thought into it, but actually can have real impacts on the choices people make. So this project, Bruce, the one that we've just published, we set out to identify ways of designing a form that would collect the trusted contact person information that would increase the likelihood that people would provide this information. We're not proposing that every person have to give it. It's just that the advisor or the dealer makes reasonable efforts to obtain it.
So on the one hand, Tyler, the thought of talking about filling out a form is quite possibly the most boring notion I have ever heard of in my entire career, on the one hand. On the other hand, because it is couched in the wisdom of behavioral insights, it's fascinating because, as you say, small changes can have an enormous impact on results. So give us some examples of what sort of structural changes could be made to increase the probability of not only a financial advisor asking for that particular name and phone number, but the client being willing to and saying yes and getting that name on the file.
For sure. And I know it does sound boring, which is why a lot of people don't give a lot of thought to how these are designed. And we really wanted to show how it can make a difference. So there's a few behavioral concepts I'll mention first that played into this study. You know, people tend to underestimate the likelihood of something bad happening to them. This could be underweighting the risks of suffering from financial exploitation or cognitive impairment. People also don't like to think about negative situations or scenarios that create unpleasant feelings. So again, they might not want to just think about a case where they will be taken advantage of. And then also people tend to overestimate their abilities and their qualities in relation to the same qualities of other people. So other people will become a victim of fraud. Other people will make poor decisions, but I won't. Those are some common human behavioral concepts that we needed to take into account here. So with these forms, basically what we did is we tried to address that. So through things such as priming people's decisions by triggering certain mindsets, debiasing people in terms of how frequent fraud occurs. There's the concept of social norming. This influences our decision-making in terms of what people around us or what we think the group or the herd is doing. In this case, what we did is we used survey data to show that 90% of Canadians actually support the idea of a TCP. So
everybody's doing it. What do you mean you don't have a trusted contact person? What are you, an animal? Everybody has one. All the cool kids have one.
That's kind of what it's getting at, because in the absence of that information, people revert to their status quo or status quo bias, where their status quo or their bias is to not have a TCP. So this is a novel decision they're being asked to make, and people find it helpful to understand what people around them are doing.
There is so much paperwork when one opens an account. So I can imagine that's easier because it just becomes yet another thing. You fill it on yet another form. What seems to be more challenging is when you've got an established relationship with an advisor. You've been with them for decades and I have to sign something new. What is the process by which those people are going to put that information on their file? Because some of them just don't have a highly engaged relationship with their advisor. And in today's pandemic era, they're not wandering by the office to sign a set of forms.
This is true, but advisors are required to know their client, and that means knowing significant changes in their life, their personal financial circumstances. So conversations are supposed to occur from time to time. There is supposed to be methods of obtaining this information. We recognize that it's not just about presenting a form. These are conversations that advisors need to have or clients raise with their advisor. So there's other work underway in terms of helping with discussion guides and other tools, but there's a lot of different ways to facilitate this information. It is new for people. It's a new concept. And so we're really trying to increase the uptake because we know it can make a difference. The forms, the key finding with this, we proposed a version of the form using some of these techniques that resulted in a significant 23% increase in the uptake. So that is a massive finding, Bruce. That means many, many more people using this version of the form, if this were used in the real world, could potentially sign up for a trusted contact person. And that's a big difference, right? And that will help people prevent fraud. It will help them avoiding losses, and it will help protect their money. And so we're really working with the industry now to help publicize these findings and help them.
You didn't even acknowledge my snore there. It was a very well-placed snore. I'm afraid, Tyler, that's all the time we have. I snore, but completely in jest, because I think it's very important that people know what trusted contact person is as an idea, and for advisors that they get moving on getting that onto people's records, and for investors that they add that information because it is in service of them and the safety of their accounts. Tyler, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Tyler Fleming, Director of the Investor Office at the OSC.